You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm joined tonight with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
How are you, Dave? How you doing?
Dave, you've been traveling far and wide to get here. What's been going on with you?
I had to take the long way. We lost a lot of bridges up in Vermont. Took me a little while to get down here.
So you're like the cool guy that owns a bar in the West Village, and you get to live in Vermont. Is that a dream?
It's a dream, except for the farming part. That's a little tougher than I thought it was going to be.
And you're really a farmer now.
I don't think a farmer would call me a farmer, but I've been growing a lot of stuff, lots of cabbage for kimchi and tomatoes and a bunch of other stuff. Lots of apples. Been pressing a lot of cider. Yeah, been pretty busy.
All right, man. Well, it's always good to have you. We've got Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House, one of our regular guests in Good Brazil Bars. How are you, Sam?
Very welcome, gentlemen.
Sam, you brought us a pretty good beer. What is this beer?
Yeah, so I'll take a little sip. This is our Imperial Pilsner. This is brewed at the High Point Brewery in Butler, New Jersey, by a very, very good brewer, Greg Zuccardi. It's made with all German malts, Czech Saaz hops and German Hallertau hops.
So isn't it also known as Ramstein? Or is that a different label?
One of his it's the High Point Brewery. One of his labels is Ramstein. Yeah, Ramstein Brewery.
Well, that's good stuff. We got John Hall, who's a beer writer and a regular guest as well. John, I know you wrote a book about Indiana beer.
That's right.
And do you have another book coming out soon?
I have a book about Massachusetts beer coming out sometime early next year.
All right. And one more guest. We got another guest we'll get to a little later. Kirk Struble from 4th Avenue Pub, one of the newer Good Brazil bars in Brooklyn. How are you, Kirk?
Great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great.
Show.
Great having you on. Well, we're supported and sponsored by greatbrewers.com. Check out greatbrewers.com to learn more about your beer IQ. Have you been to greatbrewers.com lately, Dave?
I haven't been lately. How's it doing over there?
And did you ever take the test, the Great Brewers 100 test?
I did take the test, yeah.
So what's your beer
I'm not going to tell you how I did.
Sam, did you ever take the Great Brewers test?
No, I have not.
You should. Kirk? John?
No, I'd be embarrassed probably too.
I bet John aced it.
You know, I probably did, but I had been a couple of beers deep at that point, so I really don't remember my score.
Well, with a second screen so I could cheat, I got a 72.
That's pass.
Yeah, so I'm not a beer expert ever.
D but equals guys, diploma?
Guys like Sam Merritt, he's a beer expert. Sam helped write that. It's similar to the Cicerone program.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give a shout-out to Sam next Monday. He's hosting second annual. It's called the Nano Brewery Dinner. And it's at Jimmy's Number 43, but he's got two small breweries, Barrier and Blind Bat. The brewers are coming with some special beers. He's got a gypsy brewer. Pretty Things are coming down from Massachusetts. And a new brewery from Western Massachusetts, Wandering Star.
Nice.
Chris Post and Chris Kuzmi. And it's pretty cool. I think there's more brewers than customers. It's just one of those undiscovered secrets. But anyone in this room is welcome to come as our guest. And it's good food, and it's four really good breweries.
And that's Monday night, you said?
Yeah, Monday night. And on that theme, we're kicking off Craft Beer Week.
Excellent.
I think everyone in this room is doing something. What are you doing, Dave?
What are we doing? We're doing we're getting all these special kegs, and we're just going to put them on periodically throughout the whole week. Nothing super specific, but very heavy New York State list, which we didn't do last year. We had some New York beers, but this year we're really focusing on that. So. And some guys have sent us some special stuff to put on, which is going to be really fun. So stuff that I've never had. So
Craft Beer Week's really cool. I think when it first started, it was new to New York, And now it just seems like this is part of the fall, the fifth craft beer week this year. Yeah. Sam, are you doing anything special at Waterfront Ale House?
Basically, we're getting a lot of one-offs from different breweries. Everybody's approached me. Would you take this? I'll take that. Something that's really not in the mainstream of beers. And I said, yes, absolutely. We're not doing a lot of themed nights or beer dinners, but we're going to have one night for like a Sam Adams night, one night for Brooklyn, one night for a couple other breweries. And then beyond that, we'll have specialty kegs that nobody's going to have. Some stuff that I've been aging in my basement for years also.
Anything that we should know about?
There's some really big beers. I got Brooklyn Monster from late 90s. I have some Sierra Bigfoot from 2004-2005. A couple of, well, you have to come by and see.
So is there one night we should come, or that's just any night?
No, it's
we have to be there every night.
Come every night and you'll see something different.
Waterfront Ale House.
And you won't be disappointed.
The big question for Sam is, you have many hats. Sam, I know you're a chef. You went to CIA. And every time, the more I know you, the more I'm amazed at the different things you can do. One of the most talented guys in the industry, and you are. I take off my hat to you. How do you balance? You have a barbecue company, and you have two bars, restaurants in New York City. How do you do that?
I don't sleep a lot. I don't see my wife too often, but we still try and balance it. I have a really good staff. I've had a lot of longevity out of my staff, which I'm very pleased with. I have a great partner in Manhattan with Ralph Yednek. Really helps me out a lot. He's innovative, great chef. We collaborate on a lot of different recipes. I've had a couple new cooks working with me that were on my barbecue team for a while, and they've been helping me out with some fresh ideas because I'm a little bit old and I'm a little stale. So when we just sit down together and talk about menu items, we get it done.
You're in.
We are a very casual kind of place. You know, we don't hold ourselves out to be anything fancy. We're a neighborhood pub, and we have a great clientele, very loyal clientele.
Like, how have you seen, you've been in the business a pretty long time, and like, how, what kind of changes have you seen in terms of your clientele and what they want, you know, what they're looking for in terms of beer and maybe even beer and food?
A lot more in terms of food. We try to be a little more innovative, a lot more smaller plates. People like to graze a lot more instead of having just one big entree. A lot more sharing between people. We see a lot of the best selling beers that we have are IPAs. Everybody wants IPAs. People are having smaller servings of beer, experimenting a little more.
What do you do? Do you do tasting portions, or how do you do
yeah,
that?
We'll do we do a 5 ounce, 7 ounce portion, 10 ounce portion. People that are eating will try 3 or 4 different beers and pair them with the food that they're having. We try and make a few different suggestions. I try and keep the menu a little bit, the beer menu a little bit diverse to match all the food specials as well. We cook a lot with beer. We do a lot of different braises, marinades, dressings.
You know, now there's so many new beer bars in New York, especially in Brooklyn. Back when you started, when did you first start Waterfront Ale House? 90-something?
1989. 1989.
When I was in high school. No, not really.
Well, we didn't have to.
I think I was unemployed in 89.
I was unemployed too.
I was already unemployed.
But how many beer bars were there back then? There was you. Was Mugs open yet?
I have 5 fingers on my hand. That's about it. Ed Mugs was not open.
Not Mugs?
No, there was
Brazen Head? Were they
No.
No.
Nothing. We were probably the first bar in Brooklyn. There was a few places down.
I mean, the River Run kind of, you know, in Tribeca, we had, you know, I was bartending there. They had a craft beer list, but I mean, they weren't a beer bar, but they had a good list. But I don't know of any, I don't Leaker think there Street, was a beer bar back in 89.
If it was, it was all bottled beers. Yeah. You know, it was, somebody had a row of, you know, 100 bottled beers on the wall. Right. That's it. But to get really craft beers on draft, I was making calls to everybody, and probably the first one that we got was Anchor. Anchor was extremely supportive in the beginning, and they hooked me up with a few other breweries, and maybe within 6 months or so, I was starting to get calls from other people, but it was very, very tough. There was four beer distributors that had maybe 15 craft beers that they were selling between them.
How did you get into that? I mean, back then it was a different world. I mean, it wasn't like you're living in England. You know, what did you have the choices of? You had, you
years
know,
ago, booze I was in the ice cream business.
Booze and beer. Beer and booze.
I was in the ice cream business, and someone that I was dealing with at the time, who is now my partner, had a property in Seattle, and he said, this whole craft beer thing is going on in Seattle, but nobody's doing it in New York. Let's try it. You know, there's a neighborhood pub. There was a place that had just shut down, was vacant for a little while. It was a very popular place in the neighborhood, but he said, nobody's ever done this thing out here, and we should try it. Let's try and make a few phone calls. We'll just sell a burger and a couple sandwiches and put out some really good beer. And it took off.
So you were a beer really bar from off. The time you opened.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, let's raise our glass to Sam right here.
We opened up. Okay. Cheers. Never hurts to have a beer. We opened up in 89 with 8 drafts. And that was...
Yeah, that was a lot for
unheard of. Like nobody. Half of them were imports. Some decent German beer. Dieter Steinmann at the time was in business. And they gave us some really good German beers. And I had a fair amount of German items on the menu. Some worst platters and some appetizers that were.
John's giving you a thumbs up. Well. John, so, you like that, don't you?
I do, actually. It's nice to hear.
You know, it worked, and now it's becoming another renaissance.
You know, before I opened Jimmy's number 43, I had the same leap of faith. I was like, I'd always have places with food, some wine, liquor. I was like, how can I open a place that's just a beer place? And I was going to Zum Schneider on Avenue C. And the same thing. I was like, I like to go there. I'm happy just drinking beer, eating simple food. So I guess the Germans showed us the way. I know the English showed Ray Dieter the way for DBA.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So
I have some German heritage in me. So we used to go to my parents used to take me to the German beer halls years ago. And
so there's a long history in New York.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the old New York. And we got Kirk now from 4th Avenue Pub. What inspired you to get into the beer business?
I've always liked craft beer. You know, since college, I think the first experience was having a Sam Adams. I think a girlfriend I was dating at the time gave me a case of Sam Adams, and I was like, wow, this isn't like the stuff that we drink normally, you know, watching basketball games and that sort of thing. And it just kind of grew from there. My brother and I got into home brewing, and just fell in love with it and traveled, you know, pretty extensively in Europe and, you know, throughout the United States and different brew pubs, whether it be out in, you know, the Pizza Port in San Diego or some of the other spots, and just really, you know, got a love for it. And that's pretty much where it came from. And, you know, opening the 4th Avenue Pub or kind of standing on the shoulders of giants with, you know, Sam and Dave and obviously the people that have gone before us and, you know, kind of laid the groundwork, you know, Ray at DBA and always want to pay, like, you know, homage to you gentlemen for...
homage before us, brother.
Yeah, exactly. I bowed.
But you work as hard as everybody else, you know?
Absolutely, you know.
Is it glamorous being a bar owner?
No. Yeah, I think I have a lot of friends who are like, oh, man, it's so cool. You own a bar. I'm like, well, you should be with me when I'm like,
yeah, it's
moving
so
kegs.
Not glamorous. I mean, oh, I keep trying to stress yeah, that. No. Nobody ever believes us.
Yeah,
it's like follow me around
whenever when everybody else is having a good time. You're working.
You're working. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is awesome, man. Thank you for having us. I'm like, well, that's not really what we do, but yeah, you know. But yeah, I love it all the same. So it's been a I guess a labor of love is what you'd call it. So
it's you know, going back to what Sam was saying before. I mean, in the early days, it was. You could get pretty much any beer you wanted. You could get, if there were even, there weren't really one-offs back then, but you could, you pretty much had your pick of the litter, but you know, they were, not everybody, your clientele wasn't really ready for it. And now there's, a, you know, a million beer bars, everybody's selling good beer, so it's much harder to get the beer, and of course, everybody now wants it. So so it's kind of a reverse of what it used to be.
Well, I think, I talk to people, I used to do the beer managing at the Westside Brewing Company when we were kind of like branching out and, doing more of a craft thing rather than like the home, the brew pub aspect. And when you guys were closed for a bit, I was like, actually worked in my favor because I was able to get a lot more good stuff.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The Blind Tiger wasn't, thank you. The Blind Tiger wasn't around.
That's so, when I opened the Blind Tiger, it closed too. So I think your little moment of, you know.
It's like this vacuum, the power vacuum.
That's right.
But
yeah, Sam, so. You know, Sam, I didn't know that about you, but every time you come on, I learn more about you. So 1989.
He likes to hold back, you know, just like drips and drabs.
Secrets. Well, you know, you're famous.
Can't give it all away at once, you know.
Sam, can you do that forget about it thing for us?
Forget about it.
Water funny, Alice. All right. With that, we'll take a little short break. We'll be back with all the gang here on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, an association of 34 good beer bars. And today we have Blind Tiger, both Waterfront Ale Houses, 4th Avenue Pub, and Jimmy's number 43 in the room. So this is kind of like Good Beer Seal welcomes Craft Beer Week. All right, here in New York. And one of the cooler guys in the New York and soon-to-be national beer scene is John Hall. He's
that
a writer.
That doesn't sound right.
Let's start over. John, give us your intro, because you're a cool guy.
Am I? Well, come thank on. You. I don't know if I've ever been accused of being a cool guy, but I write about beer for websites, newspapers, magazines. I go on TV occasionally. And when I'm
give
lucky,
us your intro, though.
Do I have an intro?
You have Hi, to make up your intro. Come on.
I'm John Hall, and I drink wherever people will let me.
All right.
I drink good beer wherever people will let me. How about that? So that's what you get for putting me on the spot. You don't get like the spontaneity, the originality.
You were just in a very interesting beer event.
I was. I was down in South America for the Copas Cervezas de Americas competition, which was held in Santiago.
Say that again, please.
Copas Cervezas de Americas. And it's funnier when you do it with an Irish brogue. But yeah, it's I was down in Santiago, Chile for an entire week. I just got back on the morning of the 11th, and it was a lot of fun. We judged about 300 beers from all around the world.
Watch
fantastic. I was down with a panel of great American beer experts, some international beer experts as well. But from the U.S., we had guys like Matt Brindelson and Lars Larson, who are great brewers from out the West Coast, from Firestone Walker and the Trumer Brewery, respectively. Jay Brooks, who's a beer writer out on the West Coast. Lynn Kruger, who's the president of Siebel. Wow. Oh, yeah. No, it was an absolutely international event, and it was a lot of fun. And we tasted about 300 beers and then awarded medals last week. And we also had a chance to tour a lot of the breweries down in the greater Santiago area. We got out into the countryside a little bit. We got to see how they're doing it down there. And it was my second time down there so far this year, but it's a country that has a long way to go, but a lot of promise.
Yeah, so what was your overall feeling of the quality of the beers at this point?
At this point, I would compare Chile to about where the U.S. was 25 years ago. And I might be generous when I say 25 years ago.
So at the very beginning,
they're
basically.
At the very beginning, but they have an interest and they have a passion and they're really intent on making beer. I mean, Chile is a country known for its great wine. I mean, we drink a lot of Chilean wine out up here. Lots being exported. So now the beer makers are trying to match that. And while they have a long way to go, they have the benefit of a German influence down there, much in the same way that Argentina does. There is a strong German influence down there, and that's translating into the beer a little bit, be it both in name and in some styles. You're not seeing as many lagers, but they're doing a lot of local ingredients when they can. There's some nice fruit beers that are coming out that are native to Chile itself. There's a malting company down there called Maltexo, which also does this Patagonian malt, which is now exporting to the United States. And they're providing malt to a lot of the breweries down there. And they're making some pretty comparable stuff to some of the Germans.
Hey, let's have some of your beers.
Absolutely.
Were the beers or what? Yeah. Beers mostly Chilean, or were they from all over South America that you were judging?
They were all from all over the world, actually. We had 21... 21 different countries. We had about 300 entries in the competition overall, and that's me opening up some beers here. So this is a pale ale that comes from the Altamira, and this won a bronze in the competition. This guy has been open for about a little bit less than a year, I think, at this point. So he's doing some good things, and the judges in the pale ale category really enjoyed what he was doing. He's in a small brewery just south of Santiago.
Can we do a good beer seal panel here?
Absolutely.
Let our judges, who are the real experts of beer, if you have a good beer seal bar in New York City, you must be one of the best judges of beer in the world.
So let me just preface this by saying that this is what passes as a Chilean pale ale, and they are doing some second fermentation inside the bottle. So if you get,
I was going to say, I see some chunks.
Yeah. So if you're getting that, they are doing second fermentation inside the bottle. So don't deduct points for that.
It's like looks like kombucha mother in your bottom of your glass.
Kombucha. So they're ahead of us then.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Sam, what do you think of this? You got to watch Sam. He's got these special techniques for tasting.
Forget about it? No.
Okay.
It's good. It's nice. Very, very clean. Nice malt.
Where's the hops?
What style is this again?
This is a pale ale.
Oh, pale ale.
Well, a pale ale doesn't need to be too hoppy. It's definitely very drinkable. It's got good carbonation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. My sample is nice and clean.
Kirk, what do you
think? This is a perfect all-around beer.
This is certainly the best Chilean beer I've had today.
Well, here comes the second one.
There you go.
Yeah.
This one is actually now an IPA. This is called Lupulus, and which is actually lupulin, the ingredient in hops, but that's what they call hops down there is lupulus. And this comes from the Cross Brewery, which is one of the larger breweries in Santiago, or I'm sorry, in Chile Greater. They do some pilsners, they do some gold nails, they do a stout. They do a really nice wood-aged beer that was first released for their fifth anniversary and that they release now continuously.
Sam, before when you were tasting it, you did something interesting. How do you taste beer?
So to get a little bit of nose out of it, I put my hand over the top and just shake it around a little bit because a beer is a little bit more subtle than a wine would be. So when you nose it, you need to get some of the hops out of it, some of the malt. and just holding my hand, if you have smell of vision, you can get the idea.
Sure.
Yeah, the
now I'm getting a lot more out of it because you've taken some of the carbonation out of it as well, and it's coming into your nose.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely not overly hopped.
No.
It's got a decent head retention.
I'm still looking for my first hop.
That's well. Flavor. Spend a week in Chile, and you're still looking for
still
your
looking.
Hops.
It's right
there. So you look for head retention.
So the only hops on
it's
this
on the label.
The only
it's
I was going to say are on the label. Yeah, there's nothing label. Actually in the bottle.
This has a little bit more, maybe a little chewy caramel.
Yeah.
In the last one, it could almost go towards a step before oxidation, maybe.
Yeah, beers like this are going to have a hard time traveling from Chile. I mean, just because, you know.
But when you taste it, so Sam, you're kind of tasting it like technically. You're breaking it down by these areas. And Sam, Dave, how do you taste?
Well,
do you have
I mean, I do more just like, you know, do I like it?
Yeah.
You know, pretty simple. And like if it says, you know, if it says on the label what it's supposed to be, is it anything like that? I mean, you know, this is a lupulin. It should be pretty hoppy. It's not hoppy at all.
Well, the thing that I'd like to point out, though, is that the argument that I've heard down there from the brewers is they're saying, well, our drinkers won't go for hoppy beers. And then we'll ask the question, well, have you tried? And they say no, because they won't go for hoppy beers. So there really needs to be somebody who goes down there and just crams beer.
You have to jam it down their throat.
And the problem that I've heard from a lot of the brewers themselves is that they have to import them, and it's very, very expensive to do so. So they sort of skimp on that a little bit. So you tend to see a lot more box down there, beer styles that don't rely as heavily on hops. But there is definitely a crying out by the general public and folks that I've met when I've been down there twice this year who really want to have hops. Matt Brindelson gave a talk from Firestone Walker. He brought out bottles of Pine of the Elder. And you should have seen the crowd. Their jaws just dropped. I mean, they were in the house of hops at that point, and they couldn't have been happier. And then he followed it up by bringing out a bottle of his Parabola, which is the Russian Imperial Stout that's been aged in bourbon barrels for a year. And so many people had never tried anything like that before. And if actually there's going to be a beer that follows up Pliny, that could probably be one of the few that...
Now all those people are addicted and then you all left.
That's right. We did.
And now they got nothing.
That's right.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still drinking lupulin.
That's right.
I don't want any more Chilean beer. I'm gonna wait a couple years.
That's fine.
How about something else? What else do we have?
We got a High Life from Cigar City.
Mm. Ooh,
that's a
that's okay. Got a little bit of hops in it, huh?
Ooh, it's white oak.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It's even
who
better.
Who brought this beer?
Oh, that was me. Actually, yeah. I just
thanks, Kurt. You can come back.
I can't. You know, it's like I don't know what to bring for you guys. I'm like I don't know what these. I mean, I don't want to be embarrassed. I'm going to bring something good. So
you did.
And I brought the Lost Abbey and the.
I saw that too.
Yeah.
So there's like this international beer movement is kind of huge, John. It's like you get people, they want you to taste beer in Chile.
Absolutely.
What other places that are emerging for the beer scene?
That's an excellent question. A lot of the developing countries that you'd think of, it's going to be, I think, a lot of South American countries, from what I've seen, Brazil, Argentina are starting to grow. Even small countries like Israel are starting to produce beer. They're starting to open up breweries, brew pubs along those lines. South Africa has an emerging beer scene as well these days, which is really nice. And even places like Australia and New Zealand have a growing beer scene. So it's... pretty much everywhere you go where alcohol's not illegal, I think you can find an emerging beer scene, whether or not it's going to be stuff that you want to drink around the clock.
Sam, we could go start over in one of those countries, you know.
You guys could be kings.
Begin again. Not so much competition.
Well, this talk about craft beer. This is the white oak aged India Pale Ale from Cigar City. Wow. They're coming by my place on Wednesday. We've got the Cigar City owner. Here's a question for the panel. Who knows the owner of Cigar City? What does his dad do for a living?
He owns a strip club.
Strip club. I love that.
He's from Florida. There was a 50-50 chance. He's from Florida, and he's got a lot of money.
Retirement home or
it's
strip
like Walt
club?
Disney or a strip club.
And so, you know, he's got the girls. Now he wants the beer, too. So
that's why it's the Cigar City, you know. But I like his beers a lot.
No,
I mean, talk about you got chili like emerging, and then you got this wow, new world South, you know, Florida.
Florida's like definitely that South area Florida. Too. The Tampa area is amazing in terms. They got a lot of great beer bars, yeah. World class beer bars, and some great, you know, Cigar City and Saint Somewhere, and they're doing some good stuff down. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, probably 10 years ago you never would have guessed, but now it's definitely one of the better areas.
So who knows the joke about when the stripper went to the beer bar? I'm not a good
man.
There's got to be one. Come on.
Go ahead. Finish it. Yeah, finish it.
John, come on.
No, you set us up. Now you got to knock it down.
Yeah.
Well.
Now you're scaring me. You don't even want to say it.
Yeah. She went to the humidor. I don't know. But they have a humidor series of beer.
No more jokes.
I'm not, no jokes.
That seems like cheating.
I didn't know we had sound effects.
It's Heritage Radio Network. Come on, guys.
Man, we are so set up.
Hey, come on. But, all right, high and lie. Well, let's raise our glasses to international beer. But
international
I will
beer.
Say this. We like our hops in America and craft beer week.
What yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Dave, tell me something good about America.
Yeah, let's get back onto something else. Something good about what? Beer in America?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's quickly talk about what's coming up this week. New York City Brewers Choice on Thursday night.
Dave, I am really impressed. You put together this event, New York City Brewers Choice Year 2, and you got some awesome brewers coming.
Well,
who's
coming
down?
We got 21 breweries. And the big thing about this event, I went to it. You know, you invited me last year, and I went, and I thought it was one of the best beer events of the year in New York City. And the reason was great. It's a great venue, City Winery, beautiful spot. And but the main reason was that the head brewer or the owner has to pour the beers, whoever's there, and they bring like two of their favorite beers, and it was just great. It was like what it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago when the brewers were all there at the events and instead of the reps and stuff. And I know they're all big now and they can't be everywhere, but it's just so nice to have them all in one place. And it really made it kind of amazing. So, and a lot of them, when we were emailing them to try to get them to come this year, a lot of them said the same thing. Four or five said it was the best event they went to all year. So it was a lot, thanks to last year, it was a lot easier to get people to come. And it's coming up right before GABF, so there was, you know, it wasn't easy for everybody to make it, but we've got a great lineup. Sierra's sending Terrence out, and Rob Todd from Allagash is coming down. And
that's a big deal. So Rob Todd from Allagash is coming down to a beer event.
Yeah, and he just had back surgery. Apparently he's he's, you know,
ailing.
But if you want to check it out,
but he won't be that night, I can tell you.
NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. It's part of Craft Beer Week, New York Craft Beer Week. It's at City Winery. It's hosted by Beer Sessions Radio.
So. Yeah, and you got some great food. You got all the food, man. It's like
food. It's going to be a good one. But the thing I like most about it is the brewers. You're right. What's the brewer's name from Crossroads? So
Kenny.
The Crossroads guy was Butternuts, right? Was he Butternuts before or the separate guys?
I don't know. I mean, Hutch is the name of the brewer. I don't know if he was at Butternuts, but the guy who owns it is Kenny, and he's coming down. I don't know if his brewer is coming or not. He didn't say, but he's definitely going to be there. And they make a great IPA that I really like. And that's actually the only beer from them I've had. Hopefully they're not a one-hit wonder.
Who's the brewer from Ithaca? Do you know him, Sam, the Ithaca brewer?
No, I don't.
Oh, his name escapes me.
Jeff O'Neill, yeah. Chief.
Chief.
He actually can't come this year because he was supposed to. I mean, he was all psyched, and then he got called. I think he's like picking hops somewhere or something. And actually, Phil Markowski is picking hops somewhere too. So it's that time of year.
They were underwater up there in the Southern Tier, right?
Southern Tier's not coming either, yeah.
And you're up in Vermont?
No.
Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, you've heard about all the breweries then that are
Alchemist
underwater,
got
right?
wiped yeah. out. I mean, well, it, you know, wiped out. That's not... I mean, they got massive flooding and they're closed. John's wife said 8 months. John said Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, I never doubt John, so... We'll see what happens. But
their canning line is open up, so everybody who loves...
They opened that up on Friday, a week ago Friday. And Heady Topper, 16-ounce cans, just Heady Topper, their double IPA. I went up and got a case. It's phenomenal.
That's an amazing beer.
And so you know, they're still alive, and they will get reopened.
Absolutely.
But they were the only one that had, like, really...
Long Trail had a couple.
They were cut off. Dave Hartman said that the brewer said the water was coming through the brewery, because they're right on the Ottoquechee, and the Ottoquechee totally overflowed. The water was, like, roaring right through the place, but it didn't destroy anything, so they got really, really lucky. I mean, there were propane tanks, you know, giant propane, like, just roaring down the rivers, hitting everything in sight, blowing up bridges. I mean, it was pretty crazy.
And is your farm okay?
Mine's okay. I was at the top. I was actually sending all the water to everybody else, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm on the mountain, so...
A benevolent dictator.
I was pretty lucky, yeah. But I knew, as soon as I looked out and I saw the road was just... Like, I've never seen so much water going down the road, and I was like, that's not good for whoever's down at the bottom of the road. Mm-hmm. And there was a bridge down there, and
what about some of the other guys, like Lawson's Finest and Hill Farmstead?
Sean's fine. Sean Lawson's fine. he's actually shut down right now. He's got a new brewery. All his new equipment is coming in today. Actually, it arrives today, and he's going to brew, hopefully, for the first time on Saturday. And Sean Hill was fine. He was feeling a little guilty because he was like, man, it was just like a big summer rain for us. I mean, they didn't really get affected at all. They were also way up high on the top of a hill, Hill Farmstead. So, everyone else was pretty much okay. Everyone in Burlington was fine. The lake didn't get up even up to flood stage. So,
all right.
But it was just the rivers.
Let's take a short break. We'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
I used to drink. I used to smoke. Drink. And that's the hoochie coo. I used to smoke and drink. Smoke and drink, and that's the hoochie coo. Oh yeah. But now I'm standing on this corner, praying for me and you. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm gonna preach unto you. Deaf and dumb, I'm in that soul saving army. I used to cuss, I used to fuss, I used to cuss, fuss, and boogie all night long. I used to cuss and fuss, and boogie all night long. But now I'm standing on this corner, I know right or from wrong. That's why I'm saved, saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved. I'm in that soul-saving army, beating all that big old bass drum. Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right. All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're rocking away here. We got Dave Broderick, Sam Barbieri, Kirk from 4th Avenue Pub, and John Hall.
Kirk is definitely coming back. He just brought some Lost Abbey Cuvée to Tommy.
All right. So, Kirk, tell us about the beer that you brought us and why you brought it.
Cuvée to Tommy is the Lost Abbey's quadruple, which they age in bourbon barrels with cherries and raisins and some Brettanomyces. It's one of the most sought-after beers that they make when it was the Pizza Port, and now has moved to the Lost Abbey location. Actually, a friend of mine gave me this. That's the great thing about owning a beer bar, is that people like to bring stuff. Like, they travel, and they're like, hey, I went to this great place and brought this for you. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Wow. That is probably one of the best parts of our job.
I will never return that favor. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, luckily they probably don't have a bar.
I will charge you when I return the favor. So, yeah, so that's...
We're all doing the Sam Barbieri method. We're putting our hand... Put your hand on the glass, spin it. Fast or slow?
Not just a little bit. Actually,
You can handle, Jimmy.
In a big beer like this, you probably don't even have to do it. But
I'm just afraid it's going to taste like my hand.
It was funny getting back to the owner of a beer bar.
You can smell this without, no matter what you do.
Probably 3 cases of homebrew from different customers that every time they come, they'll bring me here. They're like, try this, try this, try this. And Ralph and I are like, oh, okay, fine. And then we look at each other, we're like, do we really want to drink this? Most of it's really, really good, but we just have an abundance of it, and we're like, okay, what do we do with it now?
Wait until you get the Chilean homebrewers.
Oh, it's going to be great.
So, John, do you want to tell us
the truth?
Hopefully
they're not coming.
Tell us the truth about Chilean beer.
They have a long way to go. They have a long way to go, and some of it's pretty good, but the majority of it really just is not.
So the Good Beer Still Tasting panel says,
eh. Yeah. Eh.
Sam?
The Good Beer Tasting panel says the Lost Abbey's pretty darn good.
Yeah, no, pretty darn good. I've already forgotten all about it. I mean, the Europeans were probably saying the same thing about us 25 years ago.
Let's send a sample to Chile and see what they can do.
And they still do, because all they get is, you know.
Yeah, a lot of them still hate our beer because it's like too over the top.
Oh, why? Why? You know, why am I drinking this?
This is really, really good.
Yeah. Well, Chile has the same problem that we did as well, is that there's a couple of big national brands of these bland, light lagers that are down there. Heineken is huge down there. In fact, they brew in the country. So, or just next door, actually. But so that's all they know, because that's the advertising dollars. That's who sponsors the soccer teams, the football teams. So that's all they know. So I think as the customers start to open up to taste, just like we did 25, 30 years ago, the Chilean people will do the same thing, and then it'll go from there. And the stuff that we have, let's have this conversation 30 years from now. And, I mean, if we're still all alive. Still here. Yeah, I know.
But, no, but also
our hardened livers.
We also have
point,
the ingredients.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the hops.
Absolutely, they have the malt. They have the water.
Yeah,
but they have to. You know, there's nobody
growing
the hops
there. There's no reason.
No, actually, they can't. The climate doesn't agree with growing hops down in Chile.
Really?
Yeah, you'd be surprised, but it doesn't. So some other parts of South America, but not necessarily Chile.
So they're doomed.
Doomed, yes.
So, John, one visit to Chile, are you the Chilean beer expert?
No, I've actually had three. Right. Two so far this year, but no, I'm still not the Chilean beer expert. But I'll go back again. It's a fun country, and it's fun to each time you go back down to see how it's grown just a little bit. And the last time I was down there was 2-3 months ago.
I think we should all take a trip.
We could do a show from there. Yeah. And be a lot nicer.
I think we could get sponsored and go down there.
That's right. From Punta Arenas down in the Patagonia region. Absolutely.
I think we should do that.
Beer Sessions Radio on the road.
The Good Beer Sale Tasting Panel. How about that?
Yeah. We'll go over to Rio afterwards. It'll be fantastic. Yeah, it's why not?
Yeah.
And then immediately we go to Belgium. Just
yes.
Yes, immediately afterwards. But yeah.
Yeah. Either that or San Diego, one of the two.
Sure, why not?
But John, as a beer writer, do you get to travel that much?
I get to travel a fair amount, which is a great perk of the job, and I'm very fortunate to do that. Mostly I travel in the U.S., but I have been doing some international traveling, and it's fun because when you go to a pub and you can set up just at a bar, you get to talk to people who are having similar pints to you or different pints, who have the same love of beer, the same love of just the people who make it, the artisanal nature of the industry. That's a universal language. And so for me, it's actually a lot of fun to just learn the different cultures and customs that surround beer in different countries and even in different parts of the country, actually. So it's a great treat for me, and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Of all the new, like, emerging markets, like, what's your favorite place? You mentioned
Chile. No.
Well, that makes it.
No.
I don't have to ask the next question. Okay, no.
No, I think the U.S. is still growing. I think if you go down to, like, the southern part of the U.S., and they're slowly starting to catch on, and it's picking up more and more and more. I have family that lives in Nashville, and each time I go to Nashville, there's a new brewery that's open, and they're really just sort of doing what they can to push Budweiser out the door, Miller out the door, and you're seeing, like, a NASCAR crowd down there, which isn't a bad thing, you know, to be a NASCAR crowd, but you see them start drinking, like, better beer, even though it's being sponsored by these huge brewers. So it's a lot of fun for me to see that and to try different things. In fact, there's a brewery in Nashville called Yazoo, which made a smoked porter called Sue. It's a beer named Sue. That's what they've come up with. And it took silver up against Alaskan smoked porter.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, if you're going to take silver in the smoked beer, smoked porter category at GABF, you're pretty much winning gold, because Alaskan has that one locked up. And it's coming out of Nashville, Tennessee, of all places. So, so there's a lot of great emerging areas and markets. And, you know, Canada's got some great stuff going on as well these days. And, yeah.
Dave, talking about all these great beers, how do you pick beer for Blind Tiger?
Same way you do. I go through all those lists every week. Now, I mean, we taste a lot. You know, we're constantly tasting stuff and reading, finding out what's out there. But, I mean, we are somewhat limited. You know, it depends on what the distributors bring in. And they're constantly telling us, you know, this is new, you got to try this. And But the great thing is there's just so much new stuff coming in. So that's okay. We don't have to like do what we did in the old days, which was sneak stuff in. They're all bringing it in, and it just seems like every time we turn around, there's a great new brand from the West Coast or somewhere else from Alaska coming into this market.
And Kirk, how do you feel? I mean, do you feel like this is a good scene for beer in New York City? And
absolutely. It's definitely grown significantly. What I think David spoke into it earlier about all the places that are opening, and there's constantly, you know, it ends up being, you know, kind of a competition to get the good stuff. And but you know, it's all about relationships, and it's getting a relationship with your, you know, your distributors, and knowing like, oh, you know, Kirk, he's a good guy, so I'm gonna call him up and see if he wants this product, this kind of thing. So, and I think that's what it's all about. It's about relationships. And you were asking about how do we find what we've, you know, what we put on our list, and a lot of it is responding to what customers ask for. You know, I've had, you know, customers will come in and go, hey, you know, can you ever get brews from, you know, Founders or these guys, you know, before they were in the market, and, you know, just keeping the antennas up and trying to see what's around. And, you know, me specifically, I travel quite a bit and try to, you know, get relationships with, you know, brewers from different markets and just do it that way. And just
And we're lucky. I mean, we have distributors that are pretty aggressive. They want to bring stuff in. And so they're out there, you know, combing the market, trying to find new things. And really, it's not about them. It's more like the breweries, can they, you know, do they have, make enough beer really to come in?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think now we've reached that point where it's more about that. And so these, we just sort of have to wait for these brands to grow to the point where they can come in.
And have enough product for everyone.
Yeah.
Certainly in this market. I mean, it's a brutal market. I mean, New York is tough. It's, you know, obviously it's competition, bars and whatnot. And, you know, to be a craft, I was talking to the guy from Midnight Sun in Anchorage just like last month. And he was saying to me like, oh, hey, we're coming to New York and I think we're going to go with such and such distributor and this and that. And I just said, you know, it's tough. Like you have to almost have a, you know, somebody in the market that is repping your brand, you know, you're so far away, repping your brand to be able to, you know, get out to people and say, hey, we're Midnight Sun and this is what we do. Because everything, I mean, all the liquid is great.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, that with a brand like that, I mean, I don't even know if they do have to. I mean, because they're, first of all, not going to be able to send enough to keep us all happy.
Absolutely not.
Anyway. So I think they'll
That's
be
That's why
pretty,
I'm going to shank you when we leave.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's like, I'm already calling
Damn,
them now. I'm calling them at the brewery now. But that's exactly who I was thinking of, because I heard the same thing, that
right.
they were coming in, and I love their beers.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Like I said, I was just at the brewery, and just everything I had was just off the charts.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's nice that they, you know, obviously they want to come to New York because it's, you know, there's a cachet. It's like, hey, our beer's in New York tonight and this and that. But
so, Kurt, you really travel to check out other
beers? I try to, yeah.
That's, wow.
It's fun. You know, I'm going to GABF, and I'll be out there kind of, you know, just seeing what's available and, you know, what's out there. And
Tim, if you weren't doing so many festivals, you'd be able to go somewhere, too.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Come on.
You're
the helper. I feel like all the good beers come here, but I know
them. It does come to you. I mean, if you know, you're patient, more patient than us. We like to go out and find it ourselves.
The problem is that these small breweries, they come into a large market like New York, and nobody wants to come in to New York market first because it's you get cannibalized.
Yeah,
cutthroat. But it's very tough. What do you do, a small little brewery? Everybody wants that great beer. They're going to flood the market for a little while. They're going to send a trailer full. Okay, everybody's going to have it, and then it's gone, and then they're not going to be able to fill up for a little while. And then the next guy is going to come along. Okay, you're going to get the next guy, and you're going to get the next guy. Now, we all have, you know, multiple taps, 20 taps, 24 taps. You have a distributor that has 400 great beers. So what do? You got to go through rotation. There's only so many you can have. And 1 week you got to have this, 1 week you got to have the next one.
How many lines do you have at Waterfront in Brooklyn?
20.
And how often do you change those lines?
We change at least two lines every week. because there's always something different. We want to keep it fresh. We want to try something different. Somebody comes in and says, I want to try this. So have you had that beer? No, I haven't had it. Okay, we'll try it. There are a lot of beers that we keep on constantly, but I always want some type of rotation to keep it fresh, get people tasting something different.
Yeah, I think the toughest thing now is for, say, a brand like Midnight Sun, and this isn't going to be a problem for them, most likely, but for other brands that come into this market that aren't from this market, is the rise of the local brands.
Right.
And we've got, around here now, we've got a ton of new breweries in Long Island and more on the way. Obviously, you know, we've got Six Point, Brooklyn, Captain Lawrence, and I was having a conversation with somebody about New Belgium, you know, and they've been sort of thinking about coming in for a long time, but they don't have the capacity to do it. But you almost kind of wonder now at this point in the game, you know, with the power of all the local brands, it's going to be harder for brands, the big national brands like that, national craft brands, to come in, much harder than it used to be.
Well, I think, too, when you see a lot of these breweries that are pulling back their distribution, too, and getting and focusing more on their local, you know the brands out in on the West Coast, like, you know, how long are they going to be able to keep up with the production and be able to keep out sending beer out to us when, you know, there's all this competition here? So
well, you know, this is awesome conversation to kick off New York Craft Beer Week. This is exactly what you can go to any of the good Brasil bars in particular and check out some of their special events. Dave, again, what are you doing for Craft Beer Week?
Just lots of special kegs and hanging out with you
and doing New York City Brewer's Choice. What are you doing again for Craft Beer Week?
We're just going to have try and keep it as local as possible, get a lot of New York beers. We're going to have a very extremely beer-friendly menu. We're going to keep a lot of the specials that are all going to contain beers. And we're going to try and take some things out of my cellar that have been sitting there for a few years.
Awesome. And Kirk at 4th Avenue Pub.
Following the same model as these gentlemen and just you know, putting on some great stuff that we have.
John, I know you have something special coming up.
I'll be out with my notebook and pen bouncing around to all the different places, writing stories about all the great things.
And what about September 23rd?
September 23rd, I'll be on the Today Show in New York with Pat Battle. I'm going to be pouring some beers and talking about beer and cheese pairings and trying to further the good message of good beer.
All right, so check out for us NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. Beer Sessions Radio is hosting next Thursday at City Winery in New York and New York City NYCBeerWeek.com, New York Craft Beer Week, to learn more about it. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com. Thanks again to Good Brew Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. Check us out anytime. We're here every Tuesday on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Dave, Sam, Kirk, and John for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
The barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today. The following is a message from the Climate Reality Project. Join us on September 14th to the 15th for 24 Hours of Reality, a presentation delivered in locations around the world, sponsored by former U.S. Vice President Al Gore. View the live stream at climaterealityproject.org. Go to our website, tell your friends, join our watch party, and help others learn about what can change in a day. Again, that's climaterealityproject.org.